Welcome, Mouseketeers and Imagineers, to episode 29 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, the most magical podcast in the kingdom. I'm Tom.
I'm Rick.
I'm Brian.
And in this episode, we've got a magic-filled, Disney-tastic topic to discuss, namely Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom. But before we get to that, let's jump into our normal weekly geekly roundup. Ricky, why don't you go first? Let us know what you've been up to, sir.
What have I been up to? I'm still playing a lot of that stupid farm game.
I still haven't gotten that invite.
Oh, man. They haven't implemented that feature yet. So, yeah, Avatar Farm Online, I think it's called. I don't know. It's stupid, man, but I got all kinds of animals on my farm, and I just feed them a lot of gold, and then they spit out more gold. It's ridiculous. I'm still plugging away at Ready Player One, and really most of my week pertains to the topic tonight, so I guess I'll just save it for then. Basically, had an extended Thanksgiving trip over to the Magic Kingdom and the other wonderful worlds of Walt Disney. So that was about it.
Cool, man. Cool. How about you, Brian? What's been going on?
I had a pretty exciting geeky week. And the most important thing, I think, I'll bring up the Kickstarter right off the bat. Have you guys seen this Kingdom Death Monster Kickstarter?
Thanks to you.
Yes.
It's the coolest thing ever. Well, it's the coolest thing ever in the last week. I'm following the hell out of that. I'm watching it go up dollar by dollar. Very excited about that. And I love the figures, so he's getting more and more of my money.
So for those listening but not willing to click on a link, give us a quick rundown of what the game is.
It's hard to describe. It's a combination of Sid Meier's Civilization, a miniatures game, and a board game. Basically, you get your cool little miniatures, and I think you start off with two survivors of some horrible apocalypse, and you rebuild a civilization from those two survivors, fighting off monsters using antlers as weapons at first, discovering pottery, discovering speech, learning sciences, and just from the ground up, fighting off monsters, then using, adapting the monster's skins and beaks and talons for better weapons, for better technologies. It really appeals to pretty much every geek aspect I have. It's a board game. It's cooperative, which I love cooperative board games.
It seems pretty cool. Like, you could spend like your loot points or whatever to buy things to enable you to grow your civilization, whether it be like your it reminded me of like when you build stuff in World of Warcraft in order to like get your points up.
Right, your craft skills.
Yeah, you craft skills. So you craft stuff up, and then you're able to apply those points that you get or the stuff that you make to build your civilization. Like, so you can really customize how you. There's no real right way to play or wrong way to play. It's pick your path of interest and how you want to make stuff grow. It seems pretty badass. One of the interesting things I saw in there that I thought was really cool was when you get your armor sets, like, they're not on the sculpt, like on your miniature. They can be applied to different miniatures.
So yeah, I'm really excited about that. The variety.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
And one of the things the Kickstarter is doing, every new goal he meets, he's adding new armor to the existing sets. So there's, I think he just added dragon armor and like phoenix armor or something like that. There's all kinds of new stuff being added. I'm really excited about this game. And the miniatures are just beautiful. I guess this company's been around forever and this is their fourth board game, but the figures they produced in the past have they're amazing.
Yeah, I think buy-in's like $100 or something like that, but we'll link it up in the show notes, definitely.
So that's Kickstarter. I learned, this is not through Kickstarter, but I did learn of a new game that I'm very excited about. Either of you played really old role-playing game Wizardry series?
Yep.
Nope. Surprise.
I remember, I think it was a GamePro in like 1992 or something like that. I remember the ad. It was for Super Nintendo, and the entire ad was just text. It showed a graphic of the box, and the text was, "Get your PhD in RPG."
Yeah.
The game's really, really serious. It's really hardcore. For instance, you can fail to resurrect, so if you get killed and your cleric casts a healing spell and you don't come back from life, your corpse is turned to ash.
Whoa.
And then they have to like find a more powerful cleric to try to restore your ashes to life. And if that fails, they delete the fucking character. Your character's gone.
That's hardcore.
It's really hardcore. Well, they're making an MMO for it.
Oh, God.
It gets, oh, God. Sony is making an MMO for it.
Oh, my God, it's going to be torture.
The trailer shows some guy running for his life from a train. I love it. I'm really excited about that.
Was it Wizardry, Brian, or Might and Magic, where I was over your house, and I was like playing one of the Final Fantasy games, and I look over at your screen, because you had two TVs in your room at the time, and a representative, like a giant or something, was on the screen, and the text read, like, 846 giants appear.
Oh, that was Might and Magic.
Might and Magic, okay, yeah. Okay.
Wizardry, speaking of that old setup, is the vector graphic black and white game that I would take one step and draw out every single possible aspect.
Oh,
I take one step and draw out.
you had to self map, didn't you, with graph paper?
Yes.
Oh, yep, my gosh.
I still have those maps.
Hopefully the Wizardry MMORPG won't have a built-in map, and you'll have to like graph everything out, and the world will change. That'd be great.
I can't imagine it being successful at all if they make you self-map like that. That was, ugh. As much as I loved doing it, it was so painful in retrospect.
It adds a certain foreboding to the world when you can't tell where you're going, though. Remember EverQuest?
Yes. And finally, I'll wrap this up. I rediscovered a game, and you guys remember Star Wars Battlefront 2?
Yes.
Yes.
It was $5 on Steam over the weekend.
Worth it. Totally worth it.
Totally worth it.
I would have got it.
People play online?
I've actually just been doing the training, like, single-player stuff yet. I really suck, so I'm working on that first. And that's pretty much my geeky week.
Cool, man. Well, let's see. My geeky week was comprised of the following. I got my data transferred over from my Wii to my Wii U.
Woo!
Kind of a process. You had to update, download an app on each system, and then use an SD card. It was like this big thing. But it was cool because when you were offloading stuff from the Wii, you got to see little Pikmin, if that's the plural, from the game Pikmin, taking your data and loading them onto a rocket ship and then blasting off.
That's right? Awesome.
With your data. So that was cool. Then when you took the SD, then it was like, okay, now take the SD card and put it in your other, you know, in your Wii U. And then once you did that, the second part of it was the rocket ship lands on your planet Wii U, and all the Pikmin come with your data and take them all and load them into your Wii U, which was cool. So very, very cool. It was a renowned transfer system I'd heard a lot about, and it lived up to the reputation. It was really, I thought, a really cool way to do this, like, this irrevocable system transfer. I can now not use any of the save stuff on my Wii anymore, so that's done. But with my data Pikmin'd over, I was able to play some Epic Mickey 2 again. Or sorry, Epic Mickey 1, not 2, part 1 of Disney Epic Mickey. I got a little farther in that game and got my Disney juices flowing for what I'll conclude my update with in a second. I've also been playing a little more Halo 4. I've just got to say, a gorgeous game. I stopped and actually just admired some of the scenery in that game. Absolutely gorgeous. Like, they're really pushing the 360, I mean, to limits I didn't know it could reach. It stands out as way more beautiful than even the Halo, you know, the recent Halo games. Like, it's a it's a cut above. So absolutely gorgeous. Been reading Ready Player One. I am in the third part of that novel now. I think I'm in like chapter 28, and it has just gotten great. I recommend that every time I speak about it, and I'll just do that one more time to our listeners. Definitely worth the read. Soon we'll all be done. We'll all be able to have a big, maybe we'll do a Ganza review of the book or something. Who knows?
Definitely.
Yeah, it's worth it. We can talk about it because there's so much to talk about. And as I alluded to during my Epic Mickey update just a moment ago, I embarked on what has become a yearly tradition for me. I took my Black Friday trip to the Epcot Disney park. Epcot used to be Epcot Center, now it's just Epcot. But this time, thanks to Rick, you know, who is a big time Disney fan, I went ahead and did an extended a 3-day Disney extravaganza, pun intended. And I gotta say, I'm not exaggerating at all when I say that I can't thank Rick and his girlfriend Kim enough for making this trip to Disney something I've been trying to capture since I started these Black Friday trips, and I've really been hoping to capture it since like my youth. This was appreciating the parks as places. This was picking through everything and stopping and looking for the hidden Mickeys and looking at the shops and the exhibits and catching this, going to this show and that show and these attractions that I wouldn't think to look, you know, to spend a lot of time looking at, and just taking our time moseying around the park, appreciating the parks just appreciating their grandeur and their complexity and all the detail that went into making them, in addition to the attractions and rides and such. And this was far more importantly, and this gets us into tonight's topic, my introduction to an awesome game called Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom.
Dun, 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 dun.
And but wise, before we dive into that topic, Rick, I just gotta say thank you and thank your lady for showing me a great time at the Disney parks. It was truly magical.
Awesome. I'm glad you had a good time. It was nice to have somebody there who really wants to listen to all the bullshit that I have to spew out. Because, I mean, dude, we couldn't walk 2 feet, and I'm like, hey, Tom, look at this. And, hey, Tom, did you know this? I was like a little kid there for my first time talking to my parents, like, and then I saw that one, and then we had this one, and then this thing over there. And that's kind of ridiculous, man. Awesome.
That is exactly what I was looking for, because for some reason, present company excluded, when I've gone to Disney in the past, it's like, all right, next ride, next attraction, let's go, move. We're like in a big rush to go nowhere, and like everybody's just in a big rush to get in the next like hour-long queue. Why? I just want to enjoy the place, and that's exactly what we did, and I wanted to talk to somebody about every little brick in the road and just every little feature that could be discussed. Much like the statue near that castle, Rick took me by the hand as if I was Mickey Mouse and he was Walt, and led me around the Magic Kingdom, and it was wonderful. Show me a new side of things. Not least of which was the subject for tonight, which is, as I mentioned, the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom game. Rick, you introduced me to the game, and I became somewhat familiar with it, and I could probably get through this, but why don't you kick the discussion off by sort of describing the game? And Brian, since we're sort of presenting this to you as someone who hasn't experienced it yet, if you have questions along the way or if there's anything you're dying to know, feel free to jump in.
I'm torn between wanting to know all about it and not wanting spoilers.
No, but we should have come.
Yeah, we won't give you spoilers, but we can definitely fill you in and get you. I mean, Tom, how long did I talk to you about it without giving away any spoilers?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the only spoiler Rick did give away, and I'm sorry, you're going to have to suffer through it. Mickey dies at the end, and it sucks. No, that doesn't happen. Oh. Yeah, I think there's a lot to be discussed without spoil. I don't really think it's possible to spoil it, because until you've experienced it, just like that light show, Rick told me about this 50 times, it was impossible to spoil. So I don't think that's anything to be concerned about.
Okay, I'm going to give a shout out here to the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom blog, where we're grabbing a bunch of information. The guy who runs the site, his name is Anthony. I can't remember his last name, so sorry, but we found him. I found out about him through the WDW Fanboys podcast and the ever popular and oh so awesome www.kingdomcast.com Disney podcast. Both are podcasts that are, they're not your Aunt Mildred's Disney podcast. They're podcasts for the rest of us. So if you're interested in any intense Disney-related podcasts, you can check those out. We'll add some show notes, as well as the one for Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom blog, which is actually sotmkblog.com. So their official write-up on the description of the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom game is this. Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom is an interactive attraction. Merlin recruits you.
You know what? This is going to absolutely suck if I try to read it. So, let's have Jonathan Ackley, project producer and creative director of Walt Disney Imagineering, share more about the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom in his own words. Jonathan, take it away.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Ackley, and I'm with Walt Disney Imagineering. And we're here today to talk about Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom. It's a brand new attraction here at the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World. We're inside Merlin's Secret Sorcerers Training Center inside the firehouse on Main Street, USA. Now what happens is Hades, the villain who rules the underworld, plans to take over the Magic Kingdom, and to do so he's recruiting the Disney villains.
I'll get myself some real nasty bad guys. We find the crystal pieces before Merlin, and how do? We're living on Easy Street, or Main Street.
Guests come here to this recruitment center, and we give them magical spell cards. Now, these magical spell cards have been created by Merlin. Now, our guests will get some of these spell cards and a map of mystic portals within the Magic Kingdom. Now, the mystic portals are very special, because they can show you whatever evil happens to be around. There are 8 different missions, each lasting between 20 and 30 minutes. And once you've beaten all the missions, then you get to finally go after Hades and finally save the Magic Kingdom once and for all.
This was supposed to be easy!
As Walt Disney Imagineers, we're always looking for new technologies to tell our stories. With Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom, we are using brand new technology to really immerse our guests in the Disney story. What's fun about Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom is that our guest gets to be the main character in the story. And so they actually become the center of a whole Disney story, and they become the hero. And I think that resonates with kids and adults.
So basically what we have here is Hades is trying to take over the Magic Kingdom, and we need to find all the pieces of the broken crystal that are all being held in being held captive by all the various Disney villains. So we got to go around, beat the villains, grab the crystal, and reassemble the crystal ball.
Yep. Fantastic synopsis, sir. And I guess I'll jump in and mention some of how the mechanics of the game work. It's a card-based game where you have what's called a key card and then a series of spell cards. And what you do is you go around to these different points around the park as instructed throughout the game, and you unlock there are these like what look like locks, and you unlock them with your key card, and that starts the interactive experience where you're either given instructions on where to go next, or you battle one of the villains in an attempt to gain one of the crystal pieces from Hades henchmen, minions, whatever. And you battle them by it's really cool because you battle them by holding forth your card and casting a spell, and the spell effects show up on the screen and vanquish your enemy. In doing that, you advance to that next portion of the quest. So they're having you walk all around the different lands. In each segment, they can find you to a certain land. So if you're in Adventureland, you'll move around Adventureland until you're ready to move on to the next land. They're not going to have you go from Adventure to Tomorrow back and forth all in one segment. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you'll have different legs of the quest. They're basically just quests like we're all familiar with in any of the RPGs that we play. So you'll have a quest for a certain villain, and it'll all take place within the land that the quest starts. It doesn't seem that the villains are located only to their areas. Like, you're not always going to get the same ones in Fantasyland or Adventureland or Frontierland. There are 10 that you have to battle, so it very well could be that way. But it didn't seem like there was any, rhyme or reason as to specific type of villain, so they're going to be in this type of land. So you really didn't know where you were going to go next.
Correct.
And how the whole thing starts is, it's a free-to-play game. Enter the Magic Kingdom, you go over, and you get recruited at either the fire station or a little recruiting station that's out in Liberty Square. out by Frontierland. And basically what you do is just give them your card, you know, your ticket. They'll give you a pack of cards. In that card pack, like Tom said, comes with a key card. And that's basically your RFID-enabled game card. And it's locked to your ID of your ticket. You know, it's all your information. Holds your game and tracks your path. So they'll give you a little training scenario, which is pretty cool. They pull you aside. You get a little one-on-one training. They show you how to view the map, what to look for, how to hold your cards up, and then basically send you on your way. So your first quest is looking at your map and trying to find out where in the Magic Kingdom you're supposed to go. They hand you a special map that's got icons on it, and these icons are representative of the different portals in all the different lands. So they'll tell you, okay, well, you've got to find the Ray of Sunshine, let's, for lack of anything else to think of right now. And then so you look around on your map and you see, okay, well, I see that, and it's somewhere on Main Street, so let's kind of fumble our way over there and try to find it. Basically, you get in the general area, and then you start looking for big, exaggerated Alice in Wonderland-looking locks, keyholes. When you find one, you just swipe your RFID key card up in front of it, and then, as if out of thin air, Tom will back me up on this, because this is one of the coolest parts, is finding the portals. You just start seeing this insanely detailed, super bright, badass animation that just pops into the scenery. Sometimes it's a poster will morph into something else. Sometimes it's behind a wallpaper. It could be in a painting on a wall in an art gallery, or it could be in a window decoration. I mean, they are hidden everywhere throughout the park, and I'd say probably 97% of them, you could walk past them for weeks and never know there was the possibility of an animation playing there if you didn't see it with your own eyes.
Yeah, if you weren't looking for it, you'd walk right past. The only giveaway is the lock, and of course embedded in the ground, which indicates where you're supposed to stand for proper functioning of the system, that, you know, so your cards can be read. There's like a crest embedded in the ground, or a plaque of some kind, right?
Yeah, of the game's logo.
Yeah.
So you find these things, and you swipe your card, and you'll get your scenario, which is basically Merlin will pop up and say, hey, Cruella de Vil is got the puppies, and she's got this crystal shard we need, so we need you to head on over to blah, blah, blah to go in and fight her henchmen in order to get the crystal shard back. So you'll see a little animation. You go to your next portal. The game's broken up into three sections. You've got easy, medium, and hard is not fully implemented yet, but it's been in beta testing a couple different times. First round is easy, and you can kind of throw any cards up. It'll read your cards, and you're most definitely going to win. I don't think you can lose. But it gets you familiar with playing the game, and you get to know where the portals are. You kind of get, I wouldn't necessarily say it's hand-holding, because you still had to do a lot, right, Tom? It wasn't like, it was maybe a gimme on the play level, but you definitely were still, you know, getting your sea legs.
Yes, yeah, you still got to figure out where to go and everything. I mean, that challenge sort of remains. The battles were sort of gimmies, but there were a lot of them too.
Right, so on the first level, there's four different animation sequences that you need to go through. As the game gets harder when you level up, there's actually less filler story. So it's a little bit more to the battle-y level, which we actually haven't experienced yet, because we leveled up our cards, which I'll get to in a minute. We leveled up our cards and went through and completed the easy level, jumped up to medium, and our next trip we'll have a secondary Sources of the Magic Kingdom report on how the medium level goes. But basically, the coolest thing about the game is when you get these cards, they're Disney character cards, and they have stats on them, just like any other kind of card game you're going to play. They have different attacks, all different kinds of stats, some really cool artwork on them, and the coolest is the animations that the cards will bring to your portal screen during your battle.
the first card I ever played was Thumper, and it was like Thumper's, like, the spell was like Thumper's thumping or something like that. And so when I presented the card to fight my enemy, the enemy's like sitting there like, glowering or whatever. Presumably, if you weren't fast enough in the harder level, he would attack or whatever, you know. But on the easy level, it gave me plenty of time. I held my card up at the right level, and then the screen just like fills with this really crisp, like well done, like spell effect of Thumper's like little like paw prints, like just like with like a percussive sound, like just filling up the screen. And then it cuts over to like the, you know, the villain's like I've been vanquished animation. So it goes, depending on the card you play, you see the animation. And what's more, you can stack, what is it, up to 3 cards, Rick?
Yep.
And when you do that, you see like all the animations piled on top of one another. So I think I threw like the Woodchuck fellow's dynamite, Thumper's footprints, and Mr. Toad's car. So it was like tire tracks, some footprints, and a dynamite explosion all at once on one enemy. And it was really cool.
And there actually are some out there that if you combine them, I haven't seen it with my own eyes, but supposedly it'll give you not just a combined animation, but a different animation because they're combined. Like a special animation that you only see if you use those 2 cards together.
That's cool. I can't wait to see that.
So there's good things and bad things about using cards that you like. You want to use a bunch of different cards because every time you use your card gets a little bit more powerful. So the game actually will recognize what card you're using and what spell level they're at. It says to max out the power of a card, you want to use it 3 times. If you use the same card twice on the same portal, so basically within the same battle, you can actually weaken your card. So if you were at a level 2, now you're backing it down to a level 1, so you got to build it back up to a level 2 and a level 3.
Oh, I didn't realize that's how that worked.
Well,
see, I learned something.
Yeah, they don't really tell you that. This is all stuff we've learned from Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom blog. So thanks again.
Thanks, guys, for learning us.
Because the Disney, man, there's really no information. Like, they don't really give you much to go on. They just kind of tell you how to play and send you on your way.
I kind of like that. I kind of like that the community has to figure out the way the game works.
So that's something to remember if you're going to play. You want to use every card you have at least 3 times, but you don't want to use it twice in a row because that will weaken your card. Easy enough to power it back up, but just putting it out there. As you get to the harder levels, you actually need to pair up combos that will work in, you know, characters from the same movie gives you a little bit of a bonus. Different combinations are going to work better against different villains. And I'm trying to explain without giving anything away. There are also some other things that can help you. Disney has released a Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom t-shirt that when you wear this t-shirt while you're playing, not only will the game scan your card, it recognizes that you're wearing a Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom t-shirt and will boost your card to maximum level during that battle.
And if you're wearing one of the obnoxious Doctor Who or Dr. Seuss Thing 1 or Thing 2 shirts from Universal Studios, it takes away a level from your card.
It actually will set the card ablaze in your hand.
And turn your hair into that ridiculous puffy Dr. Seuss hair. It will do no such thing, but that's kind of funny.
So basically, that's how the game works. You go around to your portals, you're battling your enemies, you're flashing the cards, you're powering up your cards, and dude, it was like a marathon race for us to get through this thing. Watching the animations, as in your attack animations, is super fun to figure out which ones, you know, how they're going to look when they combine, which ones, you know, do what. It was like a little treasure chest of awesome animation. On top of the fact that the quest scenarios, although a lot of them very similar, the humor in them, the artwork in them, and everything about them, the way they're presented, it's spot on 100% badass, fantastic Disney.
Yep, agreed.
Just the level to detail, you know, they basically are really taking it to a next-gen situation. I mean, you're standing there, camera scanning cards, watching battles happen, animation sequences going on, and sound effects, and dude, how many of those portal windows, like, once they're active, are just insanely badass?
They're really cool. And, you know, from a technical standpoint, it's very impressive. I walked in my second day to play. I mean, and you know, it keeps track of you. I guess it's really not that impressive when you consider that networks and databases are common, but they are keeping track of your progress. I walked in the next day, my second day, to continue playing the game, and every day you enter the park, by the way, you're entitled to a new pack of cards. Yep. So I walked in my second day to continue, and the guy's like, well, it looks like you're over in Adventureland, you know, so that's where your adventure begins. Good luck. They know right where you're at in the game and what you know, where your progress is. It's cool. It's cool. So it's very sophisticated.
I'm just amazed at how relevant this is to last week's conversation. You guys found the destination-based game.
Yeah! You're right.
You're actually doing microtransactions, buying equipment to power up your cards, too. You guys are stepping into an MMO.
Boy, you're not wrong. You mean like purchasing the t-shirt or
the t-shirt,
or,
yeah.
Yeah, or the booster packs if you can find them. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Brian. I think that really does tie into last week's topic. And geez, you know, this is not something you can really get at home, is it? You know, this is something that's what I think I love about it. It's tied to place. You have to play this in the Magic Kingdom. You can't just play it, whatever, in a shopping mall or something, you know?
Right. They do have a home version of the game that they released just recently. It's some maps, some game tokens, and stuff that you get along with the booster packs that they sell, which the booster pack comes with five cards, I think, and then a special lightning card, which is basically cards 61 through 70 out of the total set. So you can get all the cards you want for free. You just will never get 61 through 65. They call them lightning cards just because that's the symbol that they use. All the different cards are broken up into different types of symbols to help categorize them. And then the lightning cards are the ones that you can only get in the booster packs. And that, like I said before, that's cards 61 through 70. So you can get cards 1 through 60 if you go enough times and don't get a whole crap load of duplicates. You can get all 60 for free.
Yeah, and at least for my part, for the first, I went back 3 days and received the first two. I didn't receive duplicates. Then the third trip, I got a couple. But such is life.
And there's plenty of people around the park that are willing to trade, which is kind of cool. And a little known but unknown secret. I don't know. I don't know how to say that. Tortuga Tavern is kind of like a trading spot.
East Commons.
It's like in the no training spot. For those of you out there looking to trade cards, that's going to be your best bet. Probably because they have there's tables close by and stuff like that. So that's probably why.
Well... Brian just alluded to EverQuest, where there was an impromptu or sort of unsanctioned bazaar that sprang up in a zone called East Commons. And yes, Brian, Tortuga Tavern is sort of the East Commons of this game, where people.
That's awesome.
Yeah, although you will get the sort of shady, like, hey, got any? You hold many cards, guys that just come up to you, which has a weird sort of like. I am exaggerating this, obviously, but it has sort of like a drug dealer sort of vibe to it. Hey, man, what you holding? What you holding?
Yeah, and I think that's because it's not still... It's still, even though it's been around since February, it's still not super common yet. You know what I mean? It is catching on, but there are still tons of people that have no idea what's going on. I mean, how many people stopped and were like, what are you guys doing? So,
yeah.
So I think it's like that weird uncomfortable of like... Hey, buddy, what are you holding? You want to score a Jasmine Lightning card? You know what I mean? It's like it still feels like this weird underground, like you got to be in the know to play kind of thing, even though you don't. I mean,
well, it's funny you say that, weird and underground. As I was playing, we had split up we hadn't met up yet on the second day, and I was playing my game, looking to meet up with you and Kim a little later, and a couple of ladies walked by, and one of them saw me playing, and I heard them say, like, oh, that's so weird. That's that game you play with the cards. Like it was, like, disdain and, like, discomfort in their voice. Like, weird? Really? Like, when they open New Fantasyland, are you gonna, like, be afraid of it? Like, ooh, it's weird. It's new. Ooh. But, yeah, it does sort of have an underground vibe to it, and I would add... that underground vibe is complete with underworld, not illicit, but ethically questionable activities on the part of some of the more enthusiastic players, let's say.
Yeah, okay. Most of the listeners of this show know, because I'm always mentioning when I'm going to Disney, and it's quite often. And I have yet to be able to score a pack of... Actually, I changed that. I was able to score my first pack of booster cards during... on Thanksgiving Day. It was the very first day out of all the trips I've been to Disney this year. And since they've put... I was there like 3 or 4 times in October alone and wasn't able to score these damn things.
And Rick, but by score you mean go to the one store in the park where you can buy the booster packs, right?
Yes.
You can
get them at the Emporium. It's the first store you see on your left-hand side on Main Street. And apparently the cards are released on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And they have strict limits of 5 per customer. And the price was raised from $11.95 to $13.95 because of eBay gouging. I don't know if gouging is the right word, but basically you got these people going in there, whoring it up, buying every single pack they can to get the lightning cards, and then just selling all this shit on eBay. And I know that this infuriates Tom because it infuriates me beyond belief.
Yeah, I actually really, like, I'm kind of okay when people do that some places because, you know, free market. Why would you shit on a kid like that, man?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, if I show up and I'm a full-grown man and I don't find the booster pack and I don't feel like paying the eBay tax that these people have imposed, that's one thing. But some kid who hears about the game and he's psyched about his annual or maybe... you know, every 5 years trip to Disney World, and he can't wait to play and help save the Magic Kingdom, and he's going to go in, he's going to buy it, you know, he saved up his allowance, he's going to buy his 5 packs, and they're gone. The cards are just gone, and this kid, they're crapping on him, they're crapping on the kid, it's not cool.
And the fact that they throw in the home version of the game, you know, it's sad that this kid can't take his memories. I mean, sure, it's not the same Portal experience, but at least they made the effort that you can take the game home with you. I'm sure it's nowhere near on the same level. We've yet to play it. We just got back a couple days ago. But it's the idea of, you know, that kid is walking away with free souvenirs that he just basically has no use for because some scooter driving disability check fucking Hoover decided to go in there and suck them all down.
Yeah. Rick and I have constructed a an unflattering picture of...
I think I know that guy.
You know, some grifter living off the system, you know, riding a scooter out of pure laziness more than anything, driving up and just like, you know, scooting his way up to the front of the line, getting a pack of cards, zooming, you know, going to the back of the line, putting on a fake mustache, zooming back up and getting the next set of 5 cards, and so on, and then wheeling his way home, you know, eBaying them, you know, to augment his ill-gotten disability check.
Yeah, why would I go get a job when I can just continue to collect disability and rake in the cash every Tuesday and Thursday at the Magic Kingdom because I'm an annual pass holder. I live right down the street and I just scoot my way right in there.
And we may or may not have encountered at least one person who, while perhaps not in a scooter, implied that he and or she
was the local booster connection is how they presented themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that got on my nerves. Rick, when you went on Thanksgiving, did you happen to notice a parade of like scooter folks in there to get all their cards? Or
no, I didn't. I was actually surprised to see them. I mean, they're behind the counter, so they put up a little sign telling you that you can only get 5. The rest of the time we were there, we would pop in and look to see if the sign was up, because if we knew the sign was there, we knew that they had them. And no, we didn't have such luck. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, man. I feel a little hypocritical about criticizing that whole transaction type of stuff because I, back in the day when Spawn and X-Men collectibles were the shit, I was doing kind of the same thing. You know, I'm like, 20 spot in the stock boy at Toys R Us and shit like that.
But Rick.
But the difference is, it's not one place on Earth that you can get them. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not buying out the entire, I'm not standing outside the front door of, you know, McFarlane Toy Manufacturing and fucking shoveling them into my trunk so nobody in the world can get them.
Right, and you're not monopolizing really the only outlet. Right, you're not there, as just as you said, standing outside the factory, as it were, taking in all them as before they can hit the street. And those McFarlane and X-Men toys were not primarily targeted at an audience that included little kids who are coming there and don't want their dreams crushed. You know what I mean?
Right.
Little Timmy, if he goes to Toys R Us and they're out of the McFarlane toys, mom drives him over to the next Toys R Us. But now he comes to Disney, and you know we've been down that road. It's sad.
So. To anybody, I will admit, if you think I'm a hypocrite, you know, I'm a little bit on board with you, so no harm, no foul. Let's move on.
Brian, any more comments, questions before we sort of continue on?
No. Just fantasizing of a PK zone in the Magic Kingdom. That's wrong. That's so wrong.
So there's one more thing I guess I would say about the sort of booster shortage. I've got some ideas for how to fix it. Rick and his lady and I discussed a few approaches, one of which was tie the number of booster pack purchases to a ticket. So, oh, I'm sorry, sir. You know, they can scan your ticket pretty much anywhere in the park. There's scanners. You only get 5 for this ticket, period, sir. Sorry, you don't get any more than that, and that's that. And you can wheel your ass home if that makes you angry.
And that would stop...
They require your thumbprint when you walk in the door.
Yep.
They do.
And you just require a thumbprint to buy the...
Actually, yeah. I mean, there's a you know, dozen ways to skin that mouse, as it were. So that could easily be something they could do. Another way I thought of sort of making the card distribution a little more fair is... Maybe if you're under 10, you get 2 packs of cards when you show up. You know, something like that for the kids, right? Of course, then you got the scooter guy bringing his, like, nephew in so he can get the extra cards.
Okay, well, as a player, I have a problem with that. Only because they're already getting free cards. Because I saw a kid get 5 packs of cards because he was there. He was the only player. But... his mom had a ticket, his dad had a ticket, grandma had a ticket, grandpa had a ticket, and little Timmy had a ticket. So that's 5 packs he got right there.
See, I saw that too. I saw that too, and I didn't know what was going on. But I mean, technically it's fair. I mean,
That's what I'm saying. That's why I don't like the idea of, you know.
Scratch that. Little Timmy doesn't get extra tickets.
Right.
Okay. extra cards. But here's another, I just thought of cool ways they could distribute tickets. Here's a more random example. Maybe, to take a cue from the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, when you purchase a refreshment item in the park or you buy something in the park, you know, that's where you open, obviously this wouldn't work for something like a turkey leg, but, you know, imagine you unwrap some kind of a...
Oh, it could. It could be printed on your receipt.
Anything. So either a voucher or, you know, you open up the wrapper of your Mickey Mouse ice cream bar and in, like, you know, temperature-proof wrapping, there's a card. Like, oh, cool, I want a free card. They could, like, randomly, even if they weren't lightning cards, they could have, like, different spots where you could just come upon a card. Or maybe if you're staying at a Disney resort, the card fairy can visit your room once in a while. So while you're out for the day, when you come back, you can go to tuck yourself in that night. Why, under your pillow, there's a card. Who knew? Like little ways like that to sort of make the cards just appear. I don't know. Just a thought on how they could sort of improve add a little magic to the card distribution as well as making it.
Yeah, and some of that's not totally out of the question, considering the fact that if you complete a round, like we finished round one, we finished the easy level, and once we beat it, we got an extra pack of cards that day.
Yes, we did.
So one of the days, we did get 2 packs.
And we were awarded with medals. Well, we bought... you're presented by the victory screen with a medal for saving the Magic Kingdom, and we then went to a gift shop and bought the medals, which we didn't buy until we earned them.
That's right.
So we are now proud... novice apprentices. And what are we going to buy a new medal every time we pass another level? How's that going to work?
No. Well, I don't. No, because they're all the same. They're all the same.
But then we have three, and we earn them all, and we know. We know!
Yeah, we're like a three-star villain hunter.
Yeah. So.
Dude, they need to sell Disney epaulets that you can, like, pin them on.
That would be awesome!
Like, that would be sick, man.
And it can power up your cards!
Dude, they're missing an opportunity to have different color. Yeah, they power up your cards if you're wearing your medals. They're missing an opportunity to have three different types of medals for each difficulty level. But we don't know. We haven't beaten the higher levels. Maybe it is different. That sort of gets into a discussion, talking about different ways to distribute the cards and new medals and trinkets and all sorts of flair that they could give out. That gets us into the next topic we wanted to discuss, which was like the future of this particular game, of games like it, in the Magic Kingdom, in Disney properties, and maybe integration with home entertainment, like somehow integration to tie even more into last week's episode, integration with like Kinect or something, you know, maybe a way to use your cards at home, not just with the card game that you can play, but with your video game systems that could scan them in.
This thing to me, 1,000,000,000% screams, put me on Kinect. Please, 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 Mr. Disney, put me on Kinect.
Yeah, yeah. Really, any game system that has, almost every game system has some kind of a camera capability now, mm-hmm. a scanning capability. Man, you know, even the portables have that now. I mean, Disney could really have a gold mine on their hands here by integrating these cards into some kind of a home.
Now, there's already a virtual Disneyland where you can walk around the park and go on rides. And obviously the rides aren't like a virtual reality version of the ride. It's like a mini game style. Like when you go on a Small World in Disneyland on the Disneyland Adventure Kinect game, you got to like row a boat to like the different lands and stuff like that. It was actually way too exhausting for me to play. But kind of what I'm getting at is they already have – there's already a Kinect and a Disney game out there now. I would forego the having to row around It's a Small World to do something more like, you know, you go to a portal, but instead of just watching an animation when you open up the portal, maybe you're entering into that portal of the game. You know what I mean? And then you throw your cards around like that. So you use your key card to open up the portal, you get part of your story, and then you're sucked in, and now you're walking like you would in the Disney game. Basically, like, you know, you kind of tilt forward and you can move forward and stuff like that. You can grab your camera to take pictures and do all this different stuff. But basically, you could fight the villains like a one-on-one type of scenario, but still using your cards. You just, you know, wield that baby out, your Kinect scans it, and that's your character throws the spell on screen.
Yeah, totally. Or,
and then that way, they wouldn't have to really model all the rides and stuff in Disneyland, or Disney World, excuse me. You've just got, you know, you've got the footprint of the Magic Kingdom, you've got all of the scenery. All the portals are in the same place, but the gameplay actually takes place within the portal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of a mini, it's a mini game or an instance.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. There's a few ways they could implement that. I mean, they could even have you pick up the controller and battle an enemy in some kind of a fighting game and then finish them off with your card or mm-hmm. there's a million different things they could do, but yeah, the point taken, definite possibility.
Oh, you've got somebody else on smart glass that's throwing spells while you're fighting with the controller.
I like it. I like it. Or this, or smart glass. The smart glass thing becomes the portal. Ooh, you get a little handheld portal.
Yeah, and that way you've got your maps of the land that you were sucked into, and all your instructions, all your. Yeah, dude, that'd be awesome.
So many possibilities. So many possibilities. Never mind what you could do with the Wii U.
Right?
Lots. Hint, lots. Yeah, man. I like the way you're thinking with the Kinect, with home console.
I mean, they're giving away a free souvenir.
I mean, yeah.
Disney. I mean, think just think about the words I'm saying. A free souvenir. Free. Yeah. What the hell is free these days, man? Nothing. Let alone an entirely interactive video game that a real life video game, if that even makes sense. How long did we do? We played for like 3 hours, and that was running around being fanatically crazy about it.
It was so fun though. I didn't feel rushed. I was like obsessed.
Yes, exactly.
It was like I was like playing a real life video game.
Right.
But
ooh, what's this card gonna do? Oh, dude, that animation's sick. Ooh, dude, let me put that one with this one. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I was, and yeah, I couldn't wait to see what would happen next. And even though I'm probably gonna repeat some of the same content next time I play, I can't wait to face the tougher challenge of the harder level.
Right, picking the right cards based on the dialogue. Like, what did he say? What's the secret in here that I need to sort out the right cards to defeat him?
Exactly, exactly. And, I mean, I'd also add, to back up what you're saying, even if you don't want to play the game, you can walk in to Disney, and as part of your ticket price now in Disney World, you get... You get free collector's cards. That's it. I mean, just you're right. They're just canning. Well, you could then sell those on eBay. You could sell those on eBay, or you could just keep them. You got these cards to forever commemorate your trip.
And they're nice. I mean, they're granted they're not like the best quality in the world, but dude, it's a free Disney souvenir, and they're cool, man. If you're a Disney art fanatic, you know, there you go.
They really are.
Free miniature posters.
Yeah. I find them to be pretty well done. I mean, I'd stack them up with any card game you bought.
Definitely.
Off the shelf, so. Brian, let me put this question to you. You know, you're facing sort of, let's just say you're facing Disney villains, so you can probably imagine that pantheon. In the vast Disney universe, can you think of sort of a theme or some or you know sort of a subset of characters or certain properties they could exploit for like maybe another game like this in one of the other parks or in the same park?
Well, that's at Magic Kingdom, correct?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Don't they have a Where's My Percy game or where's My Perry, sorry, Perry game at Epcot?
That's Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah, yeah. The platypus?
Yeah, it used to be Kim Possible. Yeah, that's actually was the first game, and this one is kind of like the next gen compared to that. That one you can rent a little cell phone. It's free. I don't know why I say rent. They give you like this little cell phone that will give you hints, and you got to go around the park to find different stuff. And I've never played it, so I don't know exactly how it goes, but I think once you find your spot, it recognizes your location. But while we were in the Japan store, there's interactive stuff that goes on in the store.
Yeah, there is.
There's this crazy baby that pops out of the top of this toy display and starts making all these weird... It's like a robot baby. It starts making all these weird noises and lights flashing and shit. It's pretty damn cool. But, yeah, so they do have that. They have that in Epcot, but I don't know, man. I'm from what I've seen of that game, I really like the idea of the cards and the portals so much better, and it screams to me Star Wars at the studios.
Oh man, I think that's maybe why I was throwing the bait out there.
Sorry, I really dig Phineas and Ferb.
No. You're right in pointing out that they actually do have another sort of interactive attraction already in existence. But yeah, a Star Wars based one, especially in Hollywood Studios, which I really hope takes on a much more Star Wars -y air to make up an adjective, would really draw people to the park, I think. It goes without saying. It goes without saying.
And there's nothing to do in that park anyway, so being able to play this game would be badass.
Actually, having experienced the Wreck-It Ralph little display or museum, yeah, you're right. There's nothing to do besides that in the park and go on Star Tours.
And once the next movie comes out, if it's something we're not interested in, we're not going to care about that part anyway. So
you're right. But you know, Disney could play up Tron right now, they could play up some Star Wars, so they could have games based on that. Mm-hmm. And they could always bring back, like, Black Hole or something and make it awesome. You know?
Aren't they remaking that? That would be perfect. Black Hole would be awesome.
Actually, it would, because it has, like, likable characters, you know what I mean?
I just watched that movie last week. Oh my god, I forgot how bad it was.
Yeah, well, it's like, what, 1960-something?
Dude, it's got the weirdest ending. It's like 2001 Space Odyssey. I felt like I had to drop, like, I had to eat like a half a box of mushrooms and drop two sheets of LSD in order to have the ending make any fucking sense. But I digress.
Well, not really, I mean. They could, okay... After that property was rehabilitated, that's something else they could exploit. But I think Disney has a... If they sort of plumb the depths of their intellectual property collection, they could do a lot with these types of games in the parks. And
I like the idea of the Tron one. I mean, obviously I like the idea of the Star Wars one. And I think the Star Wars one could pretty much mirror... almost verbatim, exactly what's going on in the Magic Kingdom one. You know what I mean? You've got Hades is replaced by Darth Vader. All the other bad guys are replaced by either bounty hunters or famous Star Wars villains.
Yep.
Merlin's replaced by either Leia or Luke or Ben. Could be any of them. I think that would work... and would be awesome. I think it would probably end up being Clone Wars based.
Okay.
Which I would still be okay with, I guess. What I wouldn't want to see at the studios is Tron, Star Wars, and a bunch of other ones mashed together.
No, those should...
They need to stay separate entities, a separate vein, if you will.
Totally. I mean, I would be, like, cool with Tron even being confined to, like, Tomorrowland in... Magic Kingdom, and instead of cards, even you get like a data disc, mm-hmm. and that's what you hold up, and that uses that's your progress collector or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
info disc. I mean to say, right?
Right. No, data disc, and then maybe that's just like that's like a bonus level you get for finishing, you know, the hardest level or something like that, and you got to battle MCP.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but. Imagine the first level is sort of like when Sam... Was it Sam that was what? That's Flynn's son in the new movie? I'm getting the names all. Might be the guy from the Transformers movie. Anyway, imagine, though, the first thing you do is get outfitted with your disc by, like, those hot chicks. And then you've got that. You know what I mean? It's, like, customized. Like, do not lose your disc. And then that's your, like... That records your journey. I don't know. But I like the idea of the disc sort of being your identity. And, you take the disc home and fill out your online profile and stuff.
Yep, a whole new set of collector cards. I mean, dude, they did that whole, like, fake reality campaign, you know, for Tron before the movie came out. What they actually call that is I'm drawing a blank right now. But, you know, like, they had all the fake websites and you'd have to, like, play the games to get the
Alternate reality or augmented reality. Not augmented, but, like, alternate reality, I think. Yeah,
like, the whole... That whole campaign that they had for the movie, they could do something like that in the park as well. And that could be any park. It wouldn't matter. And they could use the same portals because they're just pulling up a video feed.
And instead of your key card, you walk up and your disc is the key card. There you go. There's the disc gimmick. Your disc is the key is your key card for that game as opposed to the key card.
Right.
Done.
So it gives you a different set of collectibles to, you know, to get. You know, you've got your Star Wars ones. You've got your Magic Kingdom animation ones. You've got your Tron ones. I mean, they could do so many. Dude, I would not be against seeing this happen at Epcot with the Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah.
Because it's as much as the cell phone thing seemed so cool and super advanced at the time, after seeing this game, that thing's like prehistoric. And Epcot, dude, it's so big. There's so much shit you could hide in there. And you know what? You could sneak a damn lesson in there.
You could.
You could sneak some geography lessons in there, man. Bring back the old Epcot.
Oh, there's so much you could do. You could do. You could have a Figment one. You know, all about imagination. Oh man, so much.
Captain EO in Stranger Danger, or...
Captain EO!
So I don't know, man. There's definitely a ton of possibilities, but we've also seen Disney drop the ball on so many other possibilities. You know, the Disney Quest Tron Arcade / Wreck-It Ralph Arcade, which I can't remember the name of that stupid. I knew it all day. The name of that stupid. Flip Sacks. I don't remember. Whatever. Johnny Lipschitz Arcade.
The arcade from the promo, commercial they did for Wreck-It Ralph. Yeah.
Yeah. So they dropped the ball on those things already. So I guess what? Go ahead.
Have they dropped the ball or just not done it yet? Brian, do you know what we're talking about, by the way?
Litwack. That's Litwack. What it's called.
Rick, fill Brian in on and the audience in on what we're talking about.
There's a place in downtown Disney called Disney Quest. And I've mentioned it on a bunch of the different shows. I think I mentioned it on the last show, actually. And at one point in time, it housed the most amazing technological advancements in video games. Basically, everything you were able to do in there, you can now do on your Kinect. So it's kind of lost its flavor and really needs some pumping up. And if they could have done something Tron related or Litwax Arcade related to go along with Wreck-It Ralph, there's just so much stuff they could have done to pump new life into that place. And they just sort of let it slide by. Maybe it'll still happen because the movie's doing so well. But I kind of highly doubt it because it's downtown Disney and it's kind of lost and forgotten about. But that's what I was alluding to with, you know, even though the possibilities are out there. I mean, I'm sure they have reasons why they wouldn't do it. But as a local, semi-local fan who gets to go all the time, I'd love to see that kind of stuff.
Again, with the recent episode, and again with my own fascination with Siri, is there any voice interaction in the game? Because I'm just trying to picture being a kid and, like, Merlin saying, "So, Ryan, come help me." That would just seal it for me.
Actually, that would be cool.
That would be awesome,
If they let you, like, you know,
during the training, you get to say, like, "What's your name, little one?" And I'm
Timmy. Timmy, is that right? Yeah. And then he addresses you as Timmy every time you can. That's cool. They don't have that, but damn, that would be cool, man.
Really? Yeah, cool. That would be awesome. But no, there's nothing like that now. But there is obviously a lot of dialogue, but it's not personalized, and you don't have any. There's no back and forth except for holding up your cards.
Yeah, I'm gonna go dream about there being back and forth and me being 5 years old doing it for the first time. Because,
well, as Rick and I proved this weekend, you can't be 5 years old 5 years old again, but there's no reason you can't act like you are.
Ain't that the truth?
It was cool, man. And I gotta say, seeing the kids completely sucked into it in a way that as an adult you can't be was also cool. Like running up, like super excited. And there were some times I just let the kids like cut in line because they just couldn't wait. They were so psyched about playing sometimes. And Disney, that's Disney for you, man. They've got fun for all ages.
Yeah, you've got a bunch of people out there that are super big haters on this. But as far as I'm concerned, it's a next generation type thing. They hit the nail on the head with this one. You know me, I'm a classic Disney guy, and this doesn't distract, it doesn't take anything away from the park that I love or anything. It's nothing but enhancement.
Yeah, they've added a layer of entertainment in. They've added, like, I guess what we can call, like, environmental entertainment in. And I really wouldn't mind seeing the parks just covered with stuff like this. I mean, it would get to the point where you couldn't turn a corner without something to do in the parks. Even if you didn't want to wait. If you were just waiting for a fast pass, you could go play a game for a while.
It's getting that way, man. Like, with all the interactive cues and stuff. And it's just a matter of them doing it right. If they continue to do it right, it's just going to continue to grow and be what we expect. And that just means that the next generation of this stuff is going to be even more mind-blowing.
I'm jealous, man. I was working all weekend. Sounds like you had a much better time.
You should have quit, man. You know what? You should have quit. It was worth quitting your job and throwing your financial future into jeopardy. With that said, I think we've reached the end of our main topic. And as usual, I urge all of our loyal members of the Ganza Mouse Club to the newly formed Ganza Mouse Club, or Sorcerer Cateers, as we might want to call it, to swing on over to the Apple iTunes, and once there, to hold up their spell card of choice and cast a spell of 5 stars on our latest episode, as well as all of our episodes, and to write a favorable view, one of which Merlin himself would be proud.
And if you don't like the iTunes, you can flash your cards over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can cast the spell that will let you download the show, stream the show, rate the show, leave a comment to the show, or you could use the extra special lightning card that lets you send an email to nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Or if you're forced to flash your time card, you can stay at home and like us on Facebook. I had to. And join the Facebook group
at www.facebook.com/groups/nerdstravaganza.
And with the park now closing and the groundskeeping crew out in force, it is time to say goodbye.
See you next week.
Why?
Because we like you.
Peace.
All right, Sorcerer, I think you've got all the tools. I'll meet up with you at one of the training portals and teach you how to cast a spell.
Hey, welcome, Malketeer, to Imagineer, episode 29, child.
Ooh, you better not let the Shadow Man mess up your iTunes feed.
And if you don't like the Shadow Man, pop on over and check out our website, nerdstravaganza.com. You can download the show and anything you want, child.